Hello and welcome to another episode of the Onward Leader podcast. My name is Corey. I am the founder and executive director of Onward. We exist to care for, connect, equip, and encourage young ministry leaders from around the country. This is our podcast, and this podcast is meant to serve as a resource for those of you who find yourself serving in vocational ministry, or maybe you've just been around the church long enough as a volunteer that you think I should be paid and I want a resource. And so you're listening to our podcast. However you found us, I want to say thank you. And I hope that today's episode is something that is highly beneficial to you. We have an incredible guest lined up for today. He has been leading worship for decades. He's been teaching and preaching for almost as long as that, but even more so. This is someone whose character just reflects that of Jesus. Someone who, if you know him, you know that his reputation is as solid as an hour cup of coffee with him. His name is Dominic Nuncio. Dom is an executive pastor at Seacoast Church in Encinitas, California. And Dom has also been leading and playing in worship bands, touring the world, but recently is stepping away from that and hoping to be a help to those of you who would call yourself worship leaders. So he's going to be helping train up worship leaders however he can, in addition to serving the church. If you wouldn't mind, give it up for my friend, Dominic Nuncio. Dom, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Hey, Corey. Thanks. Great introduction, man. I appreciate it.
You like that? I just read everything you told me to say.
Yeah, I'll pay you later. Thanks.
He's 6.5 feet tall. He's a bodybuilder.
Yep. All of those. Yep. Slender.
not a gray hair on him.
Not a hair on his body, let alone gray hair. Yeah.
Oh, Dom, thanks for being here, man. I the average person listening to this wouldn't know, but you have just been such a joy to me in this journey with Onward as we've done cohorts. You joined us at our last retreat. All the participants who are a part of that community just had nothing but incredible things to say. And I know that you're able to do some follow-up with them, working alongside of some of their teams and just being encouragement. So thanks for being a good friend. And I'm excited to talk about ministry with you today.
Yeah, man, such a joy and honor to have see what you built. It's really fun. And I just love the vision of building into the next gen. So honored anytime I can be a part of that. So yeah, it's great.
Thanks, man. Let's start with this. How did you find yourself in ministry? This is a question that I ask most of our guests, because I'm genuinely curious. Like, I think that the kingdom that Jesus' church specifically just attracts some of the most like creative, interesting, wildly talented people who could likely be doing way bigger, way more lucrative things had they not chosen a life of poverty in ministry. I'm kidding, obviously, kind of. But genuine question, how long have you been serving and how'd you get your start?
Yeah, so this is, next year is my 26th year in ministry. So I started right out of high school.
Your ministry career could rent a car now.
Yeah, totally. well, it's kind of a couple of things. So I always start with my name. So my name, Dominic, means child of God, and last name Nuncio means messenger of good news. And so my mom, early 20s,
need to brag, dude.
Yeah, totally. It's like a lot of pressure. She named me the name because she thought it looked cool on a record, like as an album cover, or it'd like make a great pastor's name. And so there was sort of like
mom
this.
Mom nailed it, dude.
Yeah, mom nailed it. She was a pretty prophetic lady. So I think there's a sense of like early 20-something coming up and saying, this is your namesake and live into your namesake. So that was kind of there. But I don't think I was ever like in the back of my head, like I have to do this or I'm going to let mom down. The idea of working for the church sounded like the dumbest thing ever to me. And I had zero interest in that. I was a musician, became a professional musician, just meaning I started getting paid, by the time I was 14. And so I was playing bars, clubs, art galleries, like anywhere that somebody would pay me. And
what then kind eventually, of music?
Classical music, jazz. I was in a lounge band. We're wearing leisure suits with horn sections, top 40s, metal, grunge.
By 14.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I really just wrapped myself around music and got a...
I was trying to make the freshman basketball team at 14.
Yeah, I was making $500 a night as a 14-year-old, you know. And then I started playing on people's records and started going to LA and doing some studio work. And then by the time I turned 16, I got my first major label contract. And then I got another one at 17 and then another offer at 18. So the first two, there were bad contracts. My parents didn't sign them and I was a minor. So, but that's what I thought I was going to do with my life. And then the third one came when I was a senior in high school. I was an 18-year-old. And I was doing the LA thing. My friends were partaking of all the LA offerings with me. And it just got really tired and old. And one day I just broke down in the shower, cried out to God and just said, man, this sucks. And if you'll have me, I remember the things about you. My parents were Christians. I kind of knew all this stuff. I knew experientially how I felt in those kind of environments. There was a sense of safety and peace and calming. And so I just cried out to God and said, I don't really know what this means, but I'm yours. And if I can do anything with this music, I don't even know. Like I thought, honestly, I'm giving my life to Christ. And that's the last time I play music. Like it was a dumb thing, but I just thought I'm done with this. I thought my whole livelihood was going to go be on a tour bus, touring the world, being a star, doing that. And then, so I give my life to Christ and then I get another record contract offer. They call me, they say, you're an adult now. We don't need your parents to sign. BMG wants to bring you on tour. There's an apartment for you in LA. Let's do the thing. I prayed about it, which was a new thing for me. And I felt like I heard God say no. Mm. There was an audible voice, but there was just a sense of like, no. I think it's going to give you a big head. I think my prayer was something like, if this gives me a big head or if it takes me away from you, then I know it's going to be a no. And I think both of those were true. And so I said no. They cussed me out on the phone and said they'd never call me again. And that's
sort of as close as you've ever gotten to joining the Illuminati.
Yeah, I definitely got a membership card. So that sort of thrusted me into ministry because I really felt like, well, wow, my whole identity just got like just thrown upside down. Like I'm not doing what I thought I would be doing. And then I just started serving in the church and that thrusted my career into ministry. I never wanted it, but there I was. And so I found myself leading worship because I had a musical aptitude to be in the church. And they said, oh, you play guitar or drums or piano or whatever. You're a worship leader. And my first time, I still remember like leading, and I just thought it was so weird. Like nobody applauded for me after the first song. You know, I was so used to people like clapping for you or buying more beers or falling in love, you know,
less whatever. Cigarette smoke in a church.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, this one was a little, you know, just kidding. So that was my thrust into ministry. And then, all these years later, I've worn so many hats, worship leader, executive pastor, teaching pastor, college young adult, whatever, everything. And so it's a career I never thought I'd be in. And yet here I am and have given more than half my life to being in it. So a lot of good in it.
I think, one, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Like it's intense to think about the trajectory of your life and how you were on a path that's the fulfillment of so many people's dreams, like making it in the music industry. Yeah. It's like winning the lottery, right? Like I have friends who are just grinding so hard, especially when I was young. Like they're as talented as anybody, but it just seems like you have to have your number pulled to go to that next level. And you had yours pulled and said no.
Yeah, yeah, and it wasn't the first time I said no. And even as you know, I as a Christian, and I just started working in the church, and I was working in a church of, I don't know, 150 people on Christmas, you know. Small little Baptist church here in San Diego. And I thought that's just where I'm going to be for life. That's it. Here I am. I was making $3,000 a year, you know, $237.87 a month. And I was couldn't believe that I was getting paid for ministry. It was a far cry from the 500 or more I was making by myself, just playing in a bar. But I was so content and so excited.
Less tips too, huh?
Yeah, a lot of less tips. You know, we have love offerings though, so those help sometimes, you know.
That word needs to be abolished.
It does. It's really bad.
The word, it's like a love offering, loving on people. We need to just move away from all of that.
Well, most love offerings I ever got were not very loving. I'll just say that. They were like, I guess I'm not that loved.
A love offering of money is not, you know, we don't play those games.
No. Yeah, but I, you know, God gave me a second career in music, which I never thought or anticipated, even in Christian music. And, you know, I was 26. I was in Germany. I was doing stuff with Black Forest Academy and some stuff with Hume Lake. And I remember doing like a TV thing and a radio thing. And then we did this great event. It was 900 people, military dependents. 700 of the 900 gave their lives to Christ that night. The ambassador of Slovakia is crying. He's weeping because he hears the gospel. And I'm on this high of like, we're on this trajectory in this band where now it's going towards labels and that's what it's going to be. So here's God giving a second pass at it. And I called my wife that night and just was like, man, you're not going to believe the night I had. And I said, how's your night? And here's this 23-year-old with a newborn baby or son at the time. And she goes, oh, it's fine. Great night. But he rolled over. And it was like a movie where just everything just like, it was like everything zoomed in. And I was like, I'm done. I quit the band the next day and just said, like, I'm not going to miss another moment like that.
And is that your second no?
That was my second no.
Wow.
And so how I say now to people is just, I said no to a dream, but it's a better dream. And that was fatherhood and discipling my kids and being a present dad and serving the local church and being a guy that when I was married, I was touring 250 dates a year. It's pretty hard to maintain a marriage. And it worked for us at the time, but with kids, there's just no way. And I had friends on major tours and their kids were having PTSD because they were gone for 6 weeks at a time, you know, so they couldn't go to a Kroger because that's where the buses would pick you up. And just an act of going to the grocery store and a kid would freak out because they thought their parents were leaving again for another month. And so, so no in my teens, a revival of like music in my 20s, no in my 20s. And then God's just been gracious to, I've never booked a gig, but I've had gigs consistently the whole time. I've still played on people's records and got to do basically everything I've wanted to do. And so he's been really gracious in that. But by saying no, he's given me a lot of yeses, which has been awesome.
Let's talk about worship for a minute. Because you're the, you know, this is your world, or at least has been for the last, you know, 2.5 decades. Worship is this interesting thing because it is a part of the modern church liturgy, right? Like, yep. You know, it's two songs, a tag, announcements, sermon, and a song and a half at the end, right? Like this,
yep.
A lot of churches, that's kind of how we do it. And, you know, I'm not trying to be pessimistic. Like it's something we all engage in, right?
Yep. Yep.
When we hear the word worship, the average person, especially your average church attendee, thinks that's the music part.
Right.
Songs are on the screen. I sing along. Now, most of our audience are people serving in vocational ministry that would be listening to this podcast. And I think for those of us who serve in ministry, we would probably think of worship the same way. Like you've got your planning center, you know, you've got your teaching team queued up with your worship team, and we're going to make sure that it's in Pro Presenter and everyone has their cues. There's a mid-level of production, right? Mm-hmm. What's your perspective of all that as someone who has led in churches for the last 2.5 decades? Like, what's like the thing you wish the average person sitting in a pew understood about that moment? Or if you had the attention of, you know, a bunch of young worship leaders, like what would you want to say philosophically about the place of worship through music in a church gathering? Two questions, but I don't know, whatever thoughts come to mind.
Yeah. I mean, the latter one's probably the latter one's interesting. I mean, I think in general for everybody, the music is a portion of worship. But it's not the totality of what our worship as believers is supposed to be. So it's an extension and expression. Music is a powerful tool. It's one of the few things that gets the left and right hemispheres of the brain to interact at once, meaning our logical and our emotional brain connect at once to say, I'm singing how great thou art. And cognitively, I believe that. And emotionally and experientially, I believe that. And so it's a really powerful tool. That can have us waking up on a Tuesday in the shower, not remembering the message that was preached, but remembering great is his faithfulness to me. And so those things can be reminders and tools to be a part of the rule of life or way of life for us, that in our own formation, that it's a beautiful tool that God can use. And the church can use it in a beautiful way to engage logical and emotional aspects of us. Some people are more logical, and so the music portion doesn't really make a lot of sense to them. They can't connect with it. They show up 15 minutes late to miss it. And I would just say to that pool of people, you're missing out on half of the way that God's designed you to be. And the other half that are all emotional and maybe don't engage as much of the rational, can engage with music and content that really may not be true about who God is, but it sounds great and it feels great. And so there's the call to get in touch with more of the logical, the theological, and to marry those two together. They have a place. But we're not going to be in heaven just playing Hillsong all day long. There's the object of worship, which is Jesus. And that's really our whole sum of our life. You know, as Paul would say, it's our reasonable service. It's our spiritual worship, is coming into remembrance and of who he is in view of all that he's done, in view of the mercies that God has done. We present ourselves. So it's an act of service. And that's actually where we get our word worship from. So worship isn't anything about music right there. It's really service unto God in response to what he's done to us. Not because we have to earn anything. We've been gifted everything because of Jesus. So we respond and reply with our whole lives, our money, our thought life, our important relationships. And that can be an extension with music. So it's not the sum. It's just a beautiful part of a whole lifestyle dedicated to surrendering and serving him. So I would say that for the church. I think 25 years in ministry. When I was in Fresno, I worked at a large church in Fresno, and there was a guy in town, and he had been a worship pastor for 45 years at the same church. And I remember just, I wanted to hang out with him because that just was so weird to me. One, to just be in one place that long, but two, to be in that seat. For most worship leaders, I'm not stepping away from worship because I think I'm too old. Actually, I think I probably maybe have some of the best experience and skill to stay in that role. That's just me feeling called to something else. I have wonderful friends that are 30 years in the worship leading, and I think they're just as important and relevant. But
it's not like a secret, like, hey, when you get over 40, like, you know, your hair doesn't work anymore, or
if you don't take care of yourself. But I don't know. I mean, people are flooding the dome in Las Vegas to go see U2, you know, and those guys are old. They're real old. And everyone's stoked still. Like, the Edge still sounds great as he ever sounded, you know. Bono still can hit notes, maybe not the notes of his 20s, but he's still got a great voice if he takes care of it. And there's some care for the worship leader to take care of your body and voice, and, you know, but that's take care of your temple. That's part of what we're all supposed to be doing. But this is more about, you know, I think I love the guy who was in 45 years because there is a cultural thing happening. And that's what I would say to these young leaders, of that what has bummed me out, or we're talking to this guy who had seen literally the worship culture in a church change from pews and an organ and hymnals to then choirs, to then removing the pipe choirs and putting in a piano, to removing the piano and putting in guitars, and then eventually drum sets, and then eventually floor wedges and in ears, and then eventually tracks and lights. And, you know, he saw the full progression of all that happening, and the fights that happened along the way, the significant shifts in how the church worshiped along the way. And what I would say, what he would say, and what I would say as well, is that I think the church has become way more consumeristic in the way that we think of worship. You know, when I started, there wasn't like an aisle at Walmart when you would still go buy a CD, if anybody still buys CDs now. There wasn't an aisle that existed that said worship. Mm. And all of a sudden, there was this aisle that was like worship. And then there was these faces of worship leaders that really you didn't know anybody outside of, like, you know, George Beverly Shea or something, because he was going with Billy Graham and he's in front of a million people in China somewhere or whatever. Like, you didn't really know the names and faces of worship leaders, similar to teachers. You know, there might be a tape ministry, but everyone was really localized and, you know, was specific to where their home church was. And then all of a sudden, the good of it is we got to hear different things. We got to be inspired by different things. The bad part is that we consumed it and thought we have to do what they're doing in our church. And there was a much more specific, tailored to your local community style of worship. A lot of maybe rearranging for your own context. And growing up in San Diego here, it was weird to think that anybody would be playing that song the same way at their own church. You know, guys like Eric from something like Silas, which became Future Forestry, you know, you would go to the church called The Flood to go hear these guys arrange a hymn in a different way. And then you'd go to a different church down the street and it was something completely different, even though it was the same song. It might be horns and a gospel choir at the church just two blocks down the street. Now you fast forward and there's really like six groups of people writing all the songs that are primarily being sung in the churches across America. And they all kind of sound the same. And everybody can buy a track now that really takes away inspiration, creativity, craft, and developing your own skill as a musician, because you can rely on parts that were played in the studio. It's like karaoke, and I use them, so I'm not knocking them. But it can be like karaoke, and you hear the same "This Is Amazing Grace" synth part in churches across America, and there's no synth player on stage. So it's changed from a consumerism. There's some cool tools with technology that's allowed for that, but I think it's taken some creativity away. And I think especially for the younger leaders, I think it's true. They said, like, my generation, I look at my parents' wealth or status and I want that today. But I have to realize that it took them a lifetime to get to that place. That's not the house they always had. That's not the couch. That's not the car they always had. That's not the financial, you know, accoutrements of life. In a similar way, I can look at other people's sort of platforms and say, I want to be there today and try and strive for that instead of just being faithful with the platform I have. And then should God advance that, build that along the way. We just look at all these big things and say, like, we got to get to that now. And that becomes the marker, where I think the marker is, again, back to Romans 12, like, it's a life of faithfulness. It's a life of surrender. It's a life of service. And to be faithful in that, and wherever God takes you in there, then you just be grateful for where he takes you. So if that's in front of 50 people, or if that's in front of 50,000 people, well, great. Who cares about the number? It's just how you're stewarding that well. So that's probably what I'd say. I think, you know, big high level things to the church attender and to young leaders jumping in is be less consumed with consumerism, be more consumed with the object of worship, and grow in your skill set, grow in your care and love for people on your team, for the church. If being on that platform is about getting your rocks off because you didn't get that record label contract, and now this is your chance to express yourself as an artist, I would say that's actually not the place for you to do that. The worship leader role is, I think, a pastoral role. It's thinking about how do I shepherd the people here along the way in this one expression of worship. We're going to worship through studying God's word. We're going to worship through being together. We're going to worship through small groups. We're going to worship through serving our community, but we're going to, it's a pastoral thing. It's not a performance thing.
Please pardon my brief interruption from today's episode, but I wanted to make you aware that registration for Onward's Spring Leadership Cohort is now open. If you find yourself serving in ministry and you're within the first 10 years of your career, you would be what we consider a young ministry leader. And Onward was designed to serve people just like you. Everyone who participates in our four-month cohort gets paired with a mentor and coach for those 4 months. Additionally, we do twice a month group trainings on Zoom, where we bring in different pastors, speakers, authors, people to pour into those who are serving Jesus's church. To top it all off, the best part is the whole experience ends with a week-long spiritual retreat at the conclusion of the four-month cohort. This year's retreat will be up at Hume Lake. If this is something that sounds interesting to you and the leadership journey that you're on, please visit onwardleader.com today and click the cohort button for all the details, or click the link in the show notes. Let's get back into it.
Dude, that was a lot of really good, really good wisdom. I had like eight things. I was like, oh, that's where we go. That's where we go. I think maybe only second to youth pastors, worship leaders are the proverbial, like, stereotyped whipping boys and girls in church. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, the memes, the, you know, like you said, like, everyone's playing the same thing the same way. You've got a sweet hairdo and a jean jacket and a key necklace or whatever, right? Like, whatever the snapshot of 2023 or 24, like, worship leaders is.
Yep.
One, why is that the case? And two, what do we do about that? Because I think, you know, you stay in ministry long enough and you meet people, and you're one of those people that has always stood out to me, whether you and I have shared the stage with, like, leading an event, or I've been in attendance for something that you're leading. Just the way you play the guitar is unique to most leaders I've sat under in a worship setting, right? And I think that uniqueness, given the heart that you have and the passion that you have for, like, this is a worshipful moment. I'm not here to just play for you. I think the question I'm asking is, like, what can be done about that? Like, how can we encourage our worship leaders to be themselves, to, you know, find their voice, their style, like, bring you to the table. It doesn't necessarily have to be this, like, CCM regurgitation. Like, there, God has allowed room for you as the worship leader in the same way he has for the communicator to be themselves as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just that. It's that, again, I don't want to sound like an old guy saying, don't use the tools that are available, because I use them, you know, guilty. And I think there's a lot of beauty in these things, and style and fashion and art, like, all that is part of you as the artist, if that's your heart. And so bring that, you know, for sure, man, key necklaces to your heart's delight. You know what I mean? Like, whatever your thing is, if that's how you are and expressing yourself, then that's a beautiful thing. The stereotype is that the worship leader just looks good in skinny jeans, but really has no substance and content to them, I think. And that's why they only last, you know, what? It's like 1.1 years is like the average stay of a worship leader in a church somewhere.
You go on any Christian job board, yep, there are endless worship leader job postings.
Endless. And I think there's probably a large problem with senior pastors or churches not really knowing what to do with that person in that role. They just know that as they look across the church, there's this worship leader position, which really wasn't a position before. It was a volunteer thing, or it was a church organist or pianist.
You may have had a music director, but it's because that person knew how to tune the organ.
Yep. Yeah. And so the worship leader is a relatively new role, I would say, even in the last 30 years, where it's where churches as a whole are going, hey, if we started a church today, Corey, we have a lead pastor, we're going to have some sort of admin support, we're going to have a children's director, and we're going to have a worship leader. Those are probably the first, you know, four hires of a church plant, maybe with some variation, but for a lot, that's where they're starting with. And that's really new. And I think young leaders need to recognize, like, that's, you know, I don't know if we're on the end of that trajectory or in the middle of it, you know, but something is going to shift. But it's a relatively new thing. It's not a historical thing. There were musicians in the Bible, but it wasn't like that.
Before we move away from, you just said something that I think we got to extrapolate a little. It is really easy to make fun of stereotypes. That's why they're stereotypes, right? Like, there's just a ball on a tee. And when you see a theme and a thread across, you know, most evangelical churches, like, it's easy to tease it. How much of that is pressure from senior leadership to go, we want what they have, you know, like, how much of that is a part of a growth strategy or a cultural, you know, kind of cut, copy, paste? Like, as a worship leader, how often in your career have you felt the pressure to emulate what your senior leaders see down the road or on YouTube or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, the most cynical answer is, you know, I think especially as a senior pastor ages, that it's like you cash in the 40 for two 20s, you know. Let's get younger leadership on stage to help us stay younger and relevant. And there's good in that. Again, it's not, there's not bad. That's the most cynical. So I think that role can be dismissed as something contrary to what it could be or needs to be, which is you have a pastoral person on staff that is an artist and likely in tune with maybe half of your congregation that you aren't. The preach word of God is a beautiful thing, but some people in that church are going to respond to the sung gospel versus the preach gospel. And so can we work in harmony together? And I think for every church, like, we need to break up with comparison, and we need to just be content with who we are. Like the churches that are fighting to say, like, we're a community church and we just want to be a community church. I see what Hillsong and Elevation and Bethel are doing, and hey, you know what? God bless them. That's great. But I don't need to be that. And our worship leader, he may not be skilled, or she may not be skilled enough to do that. That's not a knock at them. They're just not. That your teaching pastor is not as skilled as whoever, you know. He's not John Mark Comer. He's not Francis Jan. He's not Paul David Tripp. He's not whatever. Pick your flavor. He's not John Piper. Does that mean stop what you're doing? Or does that just mean be faithful with what you have and cultivate your gifts and talents and be content to be like, we're in a local expression. We're not in competition with anybody. I think that was a challenging thing for me, again, growing up in San Diego, growing up around all these artists at the time where other artists were doing. God checked me really quickly to just say, you're not in competition with any of these people. Like, who are you competing with? That my friend Trevor was blowing up at the time. And it was just like, man, Trevor's, you know, it's almost like Saul and David, like Saul slaying thousands, but David slaying 10,000s. And it was like, what are you comparing yourself to? Like, you're all kingdom work. We're all going after the same thing. So we're not in competition with anybody. Like, you don't need to be them. You're not competing against them. Like, there's only one enemy and none of them are him. So, like, realign yourself to know that, and break up with that. Man, you don't need to have a light show if that's not who you are. And if you do, and that's who you are, then do it well and do it great. But not because somebody else had it, but that's because of that's how you are wired and how you want to express yourself in the church. And that's part of your, like, ethos as a church.
I've worked in settings where, you know, to an outsider or someone who is more cynical or pessimistic about, like, modern evangelical church, they would have seen, like, churches like this and been, ew, gross. But I've been in spaces where it is incredibly produced and incredibly intentional and worshipful at the same time. And it's a beautiful thing, man. Yep. And a lot of that came because, well, I'll just name him. A lot of that came because of someone named Brian. Like, that was a value for him and he did it really well. I've also been in places where, you know, you have someone who's just stretching their voice and their musical talent to try and match something that they hear on the radio or on Spotify. And it's such a stretch and such an obvious, like, you know, kind of representation of what they think it should be that you're almost like, man, we could have just sang. Like, we could have just, like, our voices could have just carried this moment. And it would have been less distracting, more worshipful, whatever. I think it's also hard because, like, when you talk about music, so much of it is talent. Like, there is a learned, like, skill set and talent involved. And so to be critical, like, it almost feels unfair. Like, for someone who doesn't really have much of a musical bone in his body, I feel like a jerk sometimes when I'm like, oof. But it's a part of the bigger conversation, right? If like, this is a moment in church, all the stereotype, all of the time, effort, energy, money that's invested into it, I think it's, like, an important thing to kind of do an autopsy on and go, all right, modern church worship leaders, what is our best foot forward? What is the purpose of this? What's the heart behind it? You know, what's the heart behind that person who is leading? Why are you choosing something that's so forward facing? Can your character handle that influence? The people that are involved, you know, or is this to scratch an itch that, you know, you always wanted to play music in front of people? And, you know, I think the perception is at a church, it could be easier to do it there than with a record deal or whatever, you know.
I mean, it's 100% is, you know, and it's such a long discussion that is, you know, this is just like scratching the itch of that conversation. But
we've either upset people or made people go, oh, finally.
Yeah. I think that the part of the question that you asked a while ago is you already said it, so I'll just restate it, is just finding your voice.
Yeah.
And that's true for speaking to the artist side of people. You know, once you find your voice and you go, I'm not trying to mimic that person anymore. I'm not trying to sound like insert your favorite artist. Like, this is just my voice. And maybe I draw from 10 different things and go, oh, there it is. I really like that part of that person's voice. And once you can find it, then that's the thing that you're harnessing. But so for Brian, who loves spaces and visual and all that, it is going to feel like a very worshipful component. And technology and good production should actually, we should not notice good production. Like, when we notice production when it's bad.
Yeah.
If it's good, you just go like, this was such an immersive, beautiful experience. The first time I really experienced good production in the church was with a band called Delirious. And I actually went to go see Delirious.
I remember Delirious.
Yeah. And I didn't even want to see Delirious. I was there to go see Switchfoot, who was opening up for them, which was a weird pairing. But Switchfoot played, and then Delirious played. And then Delirious did this like whole immersive, beautiful lights and sound and just all this amazing stuff. And I just walked away going like, every part of that component, sonically, visually, that just got me. Mm. And so as you're finding your voice, if that is you, then great. But some worship leaders are trying to be worship leader and tech director and pastor. And they're like, I'm not a pastor and I'm not a tech director. You know, so it's like, how do we staff around that? Or just say, how do we work around your gifting to say, this is how we're going to structure our ministry. When you're trying to do all of them and that's not you, it just comes off disingenuous. You're probably burnout at that point because you can't do it all. So for me, like, I love production, but it's not the chief value for me. For me, it's like pastoral first and then music is second.
Would you say to someone who's in the middle of like trying to find their voice, right? Who is actively going, I think, and what I want to talk about the jump from worship leading to being a communicator in a second. But like, I remember when I first started preaching, I would emulate my mentors, right? Like, that was just how I found my voice. And then there's a moment where you go, I just want to be me now. What is that? Like, what encouragement would you offer to, you know, musicians, worship leaders, worship pastors who are like trying really hard to make that jump? They're aware that it needs to happen and they're working really hard on it.
I think if they're aware, that's the key point, is keep working at it. Like, you know, I call it like craft and character. So you need to cultivate both. That's what we're working on. If we're cultivating only craft, we're just getting really good at what we do. But like, there's the component of heart and pastoral part is not there. If you're cultivating the pastoral part, but gosh, we're just asking like God, we're praying during the musical worship at time for you to stop because you just suck so bad at what you do. Like, you need to grow in that, right? So cultivate it until you can find it. And all of a sudden you start going, oh, I needed to learn Jimi Hendrix so then I could understand Stevie Ray Vaughan. So then I could understand, you know, whatever. Like, so there was these building blocks to say, oh, and now all of a sudden I'm listening to Wes Montgomery and different jazz things.
Hanson.
Yeah, a lot of bop, definitely, for sure.
I took a risk on that. I'm really glad you.
Yeah, of course. They're sweet girls. I mean, boys. Yeah, so you've kind of like taken all those things. It's like any good artist is you're being inspired by other people's art, for sure. And then you're mimicking that for years until you kind of make it your own. And so when somebody, you can hear, again, those three artists, you know, if it's Jimi Hendrix or if somebody's mimicking Jimi Hendrix, you know, when it's Santana on guitar, like nobody sounds like Santana. They found their voice on their instrument. And if it's not them, you're like, that guy's knocking that guy off or that guy's ripping that guy off. And so the goal is learn your craft so that you can learn to express your voice. If you're still struggling in your craft to play G, C, D, E minor, then the goal is for you is that G, C, D, E minor don't become hard anymore. Like on stage, I'm not thinking about music at all because, you know, I'm playing drums this weekend. I've probably played drums already this week, 15 hours, just so I can play five songs. Mm. And it's because I'm like, I don't play drums every week. So then I'm like, oh man, I got to just work on my foot. My foot's slower. My left hand gets stuck or whatever. Like, what's that feel again? So you got to work on it so that by the time I get there, it looks like, why is that so effortless? It's because I put a lot of work in behind the scenes. You know, I spent 35 years playing guitar, you know, 6 hours a day for most of that just in my room, you know, like, so you like it for that 10 minutes at church. That's awesome. But that took me 30 years to get to that moment. So be gracious to yourself if you're learning and are aware of it. If you're not aware of it, I think the hope is that you become aware of, it's exhausting to try and just copy the whole time. Yeah. It's exhausting to try and be someone else besides who God's made you to be. You don't need another Dominic. You don't need another Corey. We just need you.
Truth transcends, like that's ministry leadership 101. Like the invitation is for you to bring you to the table.
Yep.
That's what God's asking for. If it's music, kids, whatever.
And I, and the thing my buddy Matt and I say this all the time, it's like the more we risk and share our full selves and bring our full selves, it's an invitation for people to go, I love you even more because of that. So it's a risky thing to go like, this is actually me and this is how I am. You know, I can pull off whatever, something else, but that's really not me. The moment I go like, I'm gonna take a risk and say, this is who I am as an artist. This is who I am as a vocalist. This is who I am as a worship leader. I'm gonna take the risk and say this where I feel like I need to say this. I'm gonna take the risk and say, I'm gonna shut up because I shouldn't say anything. Like you're listening to the Spirit and you're becoming more of yourself. I found time and time again, people just go, they're so appreciative of that. Gosh, it just felt like you invited us into something different than a well-rehearsed four songs that you could hear anywhere in the country. And it'll sound better on the radio. It just will. Your sound guy's not that good. Your lights aren't that good for most of us. You know, you're not that good. Neither am I. It's like, we're just not that good. And that's okay. You know, but if it's you, you can't duplicate that. Like you can't get that anywhere. And it's so sweet.
The rule of life, man. Like that's the journey that I think so many people are on. And to some degree, I think that's why the state of our world is the way it is people have just forgotten who they are, removed from what they do. And so like a hermit crab, we're just so quick to attach our entire sense of being and self to something. And the most infectious and powerful people, be it a worship leader, be it, you know, an entertainer, specifically pastors, are those who are acutely aware of who they are. It's freedom, and it's an invitation for you to do and be the same. And it takes work to get there, and it takes a lot of ownership too.
For sure. Yeah. Like I said, I spent a ton of years just not knowing who I was, what my voice is as a leader, as a worship leader, as a pastor. So it's a lot of failure. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with failure. You just don't repeat the same area of failure. So try and risk and innovate. You're going to blow it at times. I always share the joke of like, man, I forgot the melody to Amazing Grace one Sunday. You know, I was leading a traditional and contemporary church. So traditional at the 9 a.m. or whatever it was. And for whatever reason, I just totally spaced on Amazing Grace. And this is what I literally did. I said, amazing, just those three notes. And I was like, I'm already wrong. So what do I do now? You know, a couple options. I could stop and draw attention. Just go, guys, I'm an idiot.
Pause the track.
Yeah, there was no track at the time, but you know, I just recovered. And some of that sometimes is like music 101. It's like, if you do it, just own it, like amazing. And this is what I did. God, you're so amazing. And then my head was like, oh yeah, Amazing Grace. Like I got it, you know, but I've made so many mistakes, and it's just like, you can endear yourself to people by just owning it and trying and risking. There's been a lot of bad Sundays. There's been a lot of missed lyrics and light cues and band getting off a track and songs that didn't work. But you keep going. And my encouragement overall to all leaders is just like, just model faithfulness. That's the main thing. I stopped measuring a Sunday thing. Like I think about Sunday and we can deconstruct that and we can have really bad Sundays and messages. They don't go well. Music doesn't go well. Something goes wrong. But if I look at 52 Sundays, my metric for success is, but did I model faithfulness to the congregation? Did I like encourage and love and support and lead well? Yes, I had a bad Sunday here in February and a really bad April, which, oh man, that would have been an embarrassing Easter. Maybe Easter sucked, but Christmas was great. And along the way, I did 10 funerals and 5 weddings and I met with 30 people. And like, so did I just love the church well in this last year? And I can say yes or no. And if it's a yes, then I go, that's awesome. So let's go for another year of faithfulness and growth. And I can grow and learn, but let me just be faithful to this church. Let me love them as I'm being loved and being reminded of how loved I am and remind them in that journey along the way in song, in word, in deed. Let's just do that. So
I want to be mindful of time, but, speak briefly to what unique challenges you faced as someone who was esteemed, skilled in worship leading. Specifically, you know, you knew how to play, you knew how to sing, and you had the experience and wisdom to lead in that way, to teaching. Because I remember it might be 10 years ago now, you and I were talking and you're like, you know, I'm really like starting to teach more and I'm wanting to explore that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite times at church is when the worship leader preaches, you know, because it's like fish out of water. Let's go.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
So I started my first job in a church was as an associate pastor. So I was the first thing I started doing was teaching. So I was a weird worship pastor, I think, in some ways, because again, I always thought pastorally more than musically. Musically, anything I've ever experienced in the church hasn't been a challenge. We're doing things that I learned in seventh grade guitar class. So none of that has been stretching or challenging at all. So there wasn't this musical difficulty for me to play and sing in front of people because I had already had that. So that might be unique for me, but that wasn't a challenge. So there were Sundays where many a Sunday I would play and sing, put an instrument down and then go preach a sermon and then close the word and then go back and pick up an instrument and close the service, you know? So that started, that was in my trajectory of ministry. So I think, in my mind, since I was 18 was like, once I felt called into ministry, my mind was always on senior leadership or teaching at a collegiate level. So I never felt weird in that. I actually felt weird in the worship space more than I did in the teaching space, but I was just getting way more reps and way more affirmation in the worship space at the time. Everybody wanted to teach, but no one around was at a developmental level in terms of the music capacity to lead. And so I was a guy in that space. But I was a weird worship leader because I was also an elder. I was also on the teaching team. I was also on like the pastoral team ever since I started ministry, which is not where most worship leaders sit in a church. So I would be in like the high levels of leadership rooms, but I'm the guy who sings 5 songs on a Sunday, you know? So probably something more different about me and discovering my voice. I think I thought when I quit that, when I said the second no in my story of saying, I'm just going to go be a dad, that's where I thought worship leading was done for me at 26. And I was totally satisfied and content. Like I thought I've taken it as far as I'm going to go. And now I'm going to focus on my family. I'm going to focus on just focusing on teaching in the church or something like that. And so, yeah, that was not my thing. The first time I preached was different. I was a music teacher. So I was teaching since I was 18. So I had, you know, 54 students in a class at a time. So I was used to being in front of people and teaching a subject and content. But teaching God's word was definitely like, man, am I equipped to do this? So I think that's, I wasn't nervous about being in front of people. I wasn't nervous about teaching because that's in my skill set. I was more nervous about like, do I have this content right? And do I have it in a high regard? Am I giving an accurate picture of what this passage means, and I preached a lot of bad messages.
Yeah. And your journey and story are so fascinating. Hey, thanks for your time. I want to end with this last question. So our organization is called Onward, and it's called Onward for a reason. Onward implies don't give up, keep going. You know, there's always more out there. What encouragement or wisdom would you share with that worship leader that is just so overwhelmed from all the things we've talked about today? Not that you overwhelmed them or I did, but I'm saying just the subject in general, they're like, I get it, man, this is hard. I'm ready to quit. The criticism, knowing that I should be further in this journey, what have you, the lies that we tell ourselves, what encouragement would you give to a worship leader listening to this today that's just ready to throw the towel in?
Yeah, I think if I were to meet me as a younger worship leader, I think I would be like, just be more gracious to myself. So to just say, yeah, you have it, be gracious to yourself. As I'm thinking of Christmas right now, it's like, it's a Super Bowl, right? It's like, it's endless. It's the things on, it's as needed on your job description that you didn't know you were doing. You know, you thought you were going to sing songs and now you're plugging in snow machines and
learning how to play drummer boy.
Learning how to play drummer boy and, you know, getting the drum line going and the camel, you know, renting live camels or whatever your church is doing, you know. And it's exhausting. There's a lot of pressure because all of a sudden your church triples in size in one night and then we'll likely contrast again the next week, which is weird. So I would say be gracious to yourself. If you're killing it and you are, some people are leaving because they keep hearing the press is that I'm so good. I would be careful in listening to the press that you're getting. If you're just getting all this affirmation and more platform, be less interested in platform. Be more interested in faithfulness. God will give you a platform if he wants to give it to you. And who cares at the end of the day? Just are you a good steward of what he's given you? So gracious, careful of your platform. If you're discouraged and feeling it, then I would just monitor how long you've been feeling like that. Is that because of the season? Is that because of a critique? You could have three great things said about you on a Sunday and you get one person that says something that derails you. You know, the hardest part about a worship leader versus a teacher is if the teacher flops, it's just him on stage. But the worship leader, you could have killed it and your drummer played in the wrong time signature and your bass player played in the wrong key and your vocalist and your sound person. And like you have 10 other people that could make that morning go wrong. If you're feeling that way and feeling discouraged, I would just encourage you to think about how long that's been going on. If it's been going on a while, I'd ask you, like, who have you been talking to about it? What's self-care looking like for you? Are you just going? Sundays are so weird because they keep coming. They never stop. And so it's, you know, so we're, if you think about it, it's like you're throwing a major event once a week where it's like, if you look at a touring artist, they play the same set for a year and a half. They don't change it usually. You know, they have the same insert, how you doing, Cleveland? Like at the same song, like they practice the same group of things where we're doing something different every single time. So to be gracious to yourself in that, but just how long you've been feeling like that, who are you talking to? And then I guess the last part is like, what's your spiritual life like? Because again, if you're finding your own voice, that means you're not regurgitating somebody else's quiet time. It's you with just feasting on the Lord, inviting people into where you've been all week long. When I found myself on a bad day, I rely on my own gifting and didn't even invite God into it because I was competent enough. And that can pass for a while, but I found myself in areas of burnout when that didn't happen. So if that's you and you haven't really even been with the Lord in a long time or listened to him because you're just looking at CCLI and what's happening, the encouragement is to come back to the simplicity of just worshiping Jesus versus your craft or content or how your voice or guitar or drums or keys or whatever sound. And if you still find yourself at the end of that going, I'm still fried, then I would just encourage you to really deeply talk to people about like calling and is that in the church? I've had friends who have left the church because they found that their heart was way more artist than pastor. And in that role, it's a pastoral role, but they wanted to be artist. And that's great. It's a great discovery process, if that's you. And then finally, I guess I would say, if you're burnt out and you still need that and you've talked to people, it's Talk to your church about taking a break, maybe not fully removing from the church, but where can you find spaces to take a break? Are you working 7 days a week? I was working 100 hours a week as a young worship leader. And it took my wife sitting me down and saying, can you just stop? Yeah. And so, and a lot of different things, but are you taking care of yourself? Are you taking care of your soul? Are you having good community around you? And if at the end of the day, you're still burnt out, then yeah, talk to your leadership about that and try and take a break, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. I'd rather you as a leader say, take a month off and have you for another 20 years of longevity because you took a couple weeks off versus just keep hopping or just get burn out of ministry altogether. So really take stock of where you're at and then take necessary steps for that. You know, it's very likely to stay in ministry for a really long time if you have good framework around you. And that's my hope, you know.
So good, man. You are exuding wisdom and thank you. I know that most people listening to this today will be thankful, but especially for those of you who are leading in worship, you know, spaces and places, what you do matters so much, and doing it from a place of health and wholeness matters all the more. So Dom, thank you for your words today. And thanks for being on the Onward podcast.
Yeah, dude. Thanks. Thanks for the invitation. Fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And thank you to everyone listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Is a nonprofit organization that exists to connect, care for, equip, and encourage young ministry leaders. To learn more about us or support us, please visit onwardleader.com.